over Moreau's. Now it's 54-48, 6-point game, so it's a bit closer. So the crowd is getting a little riled up. It's looking like they're starting to believe they can close this gap. And if they can get a stop here, then there's a potential. Moreau's in the paint. He passes it out to Kirinko. Kirinko airballs a three. Tyron gets the ball. Tyron scores over Franco, kind of gives him a little taunt, you know, a little taunt. And the ref says something to him. Tyron's like, hey, I'm just messing around, you know, because it's a game. You need to have fun when you're playing a game. But no, you can't have too much fun. But Tyron gets the point, so it's an and one. And he makes the shot. So that put him a little bit out of reach. It's 48-57, 9 points. They if they can get a conversion right here, then they may have a chance still. Franco Williams drives all the way, and he almost wills his team with that too, but it misses. Tyron gets the ball. He's going all the way. Nothing stopping him.
Man, that dude, when he decides to drive for the pocket, it's a thing to watch.
There's nothing stopping him. So it's right now it's South ball. South ball. Tyron shooting some free throws. So number one, he makes it easy peasy lemon squeezy. Number two, he's setting up and he makes it. And then he gets a third one. Is there in the bonus? Or they're not in the bonus yet. And one more foul for the bonus. They're both at five.
5-point play there.
Yep. Beautiful 5-point play there.
See that very often.
You don't. Plus, it looks like not even in the league. What'd you say there, Johnny?
It looks like South is inbounding here. 6:35 left in the game, 62-48. Black shirts. This is going to be trouble.
I may have put them out of range. I mean, it's 7 points left, but it's a 14-point lead here. So many
possessions left in this deal.
They're going to have to score at least two baskets per minute. Or get 2 points per minute in order to come back before the game ends.
They're going to foul.
Quadruple teamed. Tyron's quadruple teamed. It was a zone, but everyone just collapsed in on Tyron. I mean, I think it's called for a foul, obviously, because you put four guys in right next to each other. There's bound to be some contact. I don't understand what that was about. And he left at least three other players open. I get Tyron's dangerous, but you got to.
I think the guy from North slapped him. They're just, you know, they're getting a little too aggressive now. They're just kind of getting some desperation moves here.
Yeah. And they're getting on Tyron. Another foul called on him. And it was they're contesting it, but it was obvious to me he had hit him. They're just trying to get a little bit antsy with him.
Yeah. Well,
but you can't do that.
Just running out of time. You know, we got 5:52 left. They're running out of time, so they're getting aggressive, and they're getting these handsy fouls. Mm.
Tyron misses the free throw. Aiden Hernandez with the rebound. Aiden goes to Curtis. Curtis goes over to Franco. Franco to the corner with still shoots the shot and misses from three. Tyron takes it up the court.
Beautiful
move. Yeah, he just carries the ball. It is a Dr. J beneath someone's hand, pretty much. And gets it in there. Cooper Haas takes it down the court, shoots a three and misses. Ethan gets the rebound. Ethan dribbles around the defense. And yeah, it's looking like they're running away with this. It's 66-48, 18-point lead here. Looks like I was a little bit too nice with the prediction earlier, but who knows? Maybe North has something up their sleeve. I mean,
Well, it's probably a good thing North took a little break here because it was getting a little out of control.
Yeah, they're kind of
the pace was going all Salt's way, and that's a good thing. We don't mind seeing that. That was a heck of a way to play a few minutes of basketball. Kept a composure. Richter was running up and down the sidelines as usual, barking, and these guys really made some great plays, made some great passes, and I'm telling you. You know, some of that athleticism, as I will call it, man, these high school kids really can play some great basketball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's beautiful to see. It's beautiful to see. And it's beautiful. It's also, you know, it's beautiful to witness this crosstown rivalry, these such good spirits here, you know, despite this game being one-sided, you know, each team, all the parents, they're all into it, you know, because I'm pretty sure most of the parents know, potentially no parents on the other team, you know, so it's a city celebration, and that's what I love about these crosstown games, you know? So.
Call number 24, second personal.
All right, so instead of 24 on the foul, it was Karinko who got the foul, and Karinko's 34, so it's they got the number wrong there, at least the announcer did, but Karinko got a foul on AJ Curtis, and AJ Curtis is shooting two free throws. He makes both, and now it's 66-50 with 5:12 left in the game. Pyron takes it up. He dribbles around Franco and jumps over Patrick Still and Franco Thomas to dunk on in between both of them. I mean, now I think Tyron's just playing at this point. He's just messing around.
He's definitely in a zone.
He's in his zone. It's looking like child's play to him. Moroz takes a shot. It misses, and Tyron gets the rebound, tries to throw it in, but it goes off. It goes off the foot of a North Star, and now it's inbound on South. Bounce pass in to Tyron. Tyron dribbles around, passes it out to Robinson. Robinson's wide open for three, fakes, doesn't shoot. It gets double teamed, but he just goes the opposite way. Almost tries to do a reverse layup in between.
That was very close.
That was very close. I mean, it looked like he was going to get that one, but still takes it down the court and drives all the way to the basket, but misses the shot. Draws a foul.
Draws a foul. 4:16 left in the game. 68-50. Black shirts. It's kind of getting a little ugly here for the home team, but that's okay. These guys are playing some great basketball on the south side. Makes first free throw. Number 24 getting ready for his second shot. And it's up and good.
And the two free throws, Patrick Still. 68-52, black shirts with 4 minutes left in this game. Tyron taking it down the court right now, guarded by Franco Williams. Tyron dribbles around Franco, dribbles around number three, dribbles around Still for a layup.
I mean, he just zigzagged through three guys there and made that play.
Yep.
You know?
Cooper Haas tries to do a left-handed layup, but he loses the ball and it flies out of his hand.
He's going
to
get fouled.
Almost a steal by Williams on a really well defended and contested pass from Tyron Williams, but he couldn't get control of it, so it goes out of bounds. And it's a black shirt ball. Moroz is on the inbound. Karinko gets it in over to check over to Moroz. Moroz with
beautiful
the
3-point play.
Another three by Moroz, the second. It's 2 for 5 from three this game.
Another beautiful three-point play on the other end of the court.
Jake Eisted, number three. He gets a shot. And that goes in. Charlie Moreau, he fakes, drives, goes around the defender and puts a nice floater in. Now it's 75-55, 20-point game by South. Stolen by Robinson.
Nice. See that?
And a beautiful
right off the backboard, and he came in and dunked it.
Yep, a beautiful backboard.
That was really something.
Alley-oop by Robinson. That's crazy. Beautiful. All right. It's looking like they're, let's see. Let's see what's going on here. It's the game. Play has stopped. Okay, so there was a foul. It was a foul on the inbound, and they're the bonus. So Tyron's going to shoot. 2:43 left. Tyron makes the free throw. Tyron makes the second free throw. Miles on the inbound. Miles goes over to Still. Still passes it in the corner for number three. He shoots another three but misses in the same spot. James Smith gets the rebound. He's in. Passes to Tyron. Tyron goes over to Robinson. Robinson tries to take it up, and he misses the layup. Cooper Haas takes it down. Cooper goes in the paint to Miles, but he missed it. Robinson gets the ball on the fast break. That's a beautiful layup.
That was.
Right now it's 81-55.
Look at that. He's wide open. 2:03 left in the game. 81-55. Black shirts. So, writing's on the wall here.
Yeah, it's looking like we were wrong about the predictions earlier. It turned out to be a blowout. I mean, I believed it was, but I thought that, you know, it's been a minute since we've played them, so yeah. I figured it'd be a little bit more.
I think you have to admit, Connor, you were wrong on your prediction.
Oh, no, of course. I did admit that a couple seconds ago, Johnny. But I believe they would have improved. a little bit over the past couple of weeks. But it's unfortunate to see that. I mean, it all comes down to coaching, but we'll talk about it after the game is over. Miles, he takes it down. He drives over, tries to shoot, and misses. James Smith with the rebound. Passes it over to Moreau's, but they call a timeout. Giovanni Ibarra is in. Your Waukesha South lineup is Evan Stout is in. He takes a three, but it's airball. Giovanni Ibarra gets the rebound. He dribbles around.
Minute 27 left. Boy, that was a
Brighton Staub has the ball. God. Giovanni's setting up. He has the ball. He's dribbling. Everyone's going crazy over little Giovanni over here. He dribbles around the defender. I believe that was supposed to be a shot or a pass, but it gets stolen.
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 15 has it on the North Star side.
Holy.
The ball goes away, and James Smith has a beautiful.
Spud McKenzie's got it.
A beautiful return. Ibarra goes in. And he drives a nice double step, or Euro step, but he can't convert on the layup. North with the ball. Number 15 drives from the baseline. Number 15, that is, if I can get this. That is Nick Bigenheimer. He drives in and gets a foul drawn. So Bigenheimer shoots the free throw and he makes it. I mean, yeah, this guy has just come in and he's already drawn a foul and converted free throws. Where has he been this entire game?
I don't know, man.
You know, he's a junior. He's like 6'3", 6'4". Pretty tall.
How tall is number five?
Number five, Giovanni, is, I think, 5'6".
There's no way on God's green earth that dude's 5'6".
I mean, yeah, from our perspective, but you got to understand everyone that's right next to him is at least nearly 6 feet tall. So,
wow.
Yeah. James Smith, who's standing right next to him, is
a great visual.
6'2".
40 seconds left in the game, 81-57. Black shirts, commanding lead. They're at the foul line, getting ready to put a little more whip to it.
Right now, it's...
Richter's not happy about something. He's giving the referee a rough time. He's only ahead, 81-57.
The number 30 for the black shirts at the line right now. And
Evan got a little excited on that rebound.
And a made free throw by number 30. It's looking like those are his first points I've seen.
35 seconds left.
Number three on the North Stars has the ball. There's a nice pass over to Freedy. Freedy,
that's a three-pointer.
You can't see quite in the corner because it was Bigenheimer. Bigenheimer shoots the three, misses it, gets his own rebound, and puts it back up. It's 4 points in the last minute. Like I said, where has he been this entire game? Brighton Staub. Over to Ibarra. But it's errant. Brighton Staub has the ball. It's over the back. And so the black shirts are not going to have the ball for the final possession of the game, unfortunately, because we were all hoping.
5 seconds left.
We're all hoping Ibarra was going to launch something and make it and get his first points, but no. North Stars take it up. It doesn't go in. 59-82 is your final. It was a blowout.
That was a good game, Connor.
It was a good game. I'm not a big fan of blowouts, honestly, especially at the high school level. At the professional level, you can kind of be a bit more cynical because they all get paid millions of dollars. And, you know, so you're like, okay, well. But at this level, it's usually a reflection on the programs and the coaching and things that don't really reflect on the players.
I don't know,
themselves.
Dude. I take a little different spin. I thought North had plenty of chances. They, you know, I don't know what the shots were on both teams, but they just could not get that ball to drop. They took enough shots.
Yeah, they did.
South had such a higher percentage. It was a little uncanny, you know? Yeah, they passed a little better. They had much more speed, a little more athleticism, but the North just had a struggle with getting that ball to drop.
Yep.
So that was my spin on it. When as far as comes to a blowout, you know, I'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I'm not saying that North didn't play amazing this game because they did, and they continue to play amazing every game, and they continuously get better with every game they play. It's great to see. At the same time, however, you do want to make sure that each game is fair, and I do think there were a couple of coaching decisions that didn't make too much sense. For example, just for the
it's a little more exciting when the score is closer. I'll
exactly.
give you that.
Yeah.
Okay. It makes it a little more tense. But dude, you know, some of us just like to I've had a heart attack and I don't need this close game stuff anymore. I'll take a blowout. It was a fun game to watch, you know, back and forth. kids played their hearts out, so it was a, yeah. It was a good deal.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to, I mean, of course you're not going to get talent like Tyrod and Cook everywhere, you know, but at the same time, when you have a good system put in place, and when you're, you know, when you're switching, when your coach trains you to get those zones correctly and tells you to switch them when the offense, because the thing about it is, yes, like some games you do miss, but if you're able to get some stops on defense and you're able to respond to them, then you can build some momentum. But that's not what happened at all. And they stuck to the man for most of the game. And I think that was their Achilles heel. I think they just, you know, I think they needed to crack down on a little bit on defense. And by the end of the game, they were just letting people score, you know, so. And, but that's your broadcast of tonight's game against the North Stars. It's a great, great, great effort. Tyron Cook showed out. Daniel Robinson showed out. Tech got some points. Everyone got points. So I'm hoping that the South will continue to play like this. And I'm really excited that makes them 9-7 on the season. So if they can continue this positive streak with going on, we can get a pretty good, you know, raise our winning percentage. And set up for the playoff season. And so I'm really excited to see what happens. This has been your broadcast of Waukesha South Black Shirts basketball. It's been a pleasure. It's Connor with Johnny Watermelon.
Brought to you by Civic Media.
Civic Media and WAUK 540 AM 101.1 FM, the Shaw. See you guys next Tuesday.
See ya. All right, Kelvin, you can take us out.
Yep, I'm working on it.
Okie dokie. What a great game. It was fun.
Yeah, you're hot.
You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So another performative display yesterday, you may remember, Matt Gaetz, the congressman from Florida. What do they call him? Congressman McForehead or something, Slappy McForehead or something. Evidently, he's got a thing who, you know, we're going to have to say the Pledge of Allegiance before every committee hearing. And, like, I don't have a problem with that. Again, you have to have these performative displays of false patriotism. You know, knock yourself out. You want to bring someone in to do that. Yeah, great. You know, I've never had a problem with that. And no one really should. Look, if you don't want to say the pledge, don't. If you don't want to stand for it, don't. That's your right as an American. And I'm okay with that. But I think Dave Cicilline had the right response, saying, look, okay, you want to bring people into this chamber to lead the pledge? Great. But they can't be someone who supported the insurrection. They can't be someone who was involved in any way to attempting to overthrow our government and overthrow our elections. And I think that's a sane, rational place to start. Now, of course, you know, there are 146 people who voted against the certifying of the election. So this could be an interesting moment where Slappy McForehead and clan They may digress a bit. But let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are we doing?
Oh, we're hanging in there. So I found it very interesting that they, and I guess so did the one Democratic House of Representatives, I think he was from Massachusetts, that there was no definition of socialism or its forms.
Nope.
So I would assume that they did that to make it vague. So when something comes along that they don't like, they can say, oh, it's socialism.
No, this was all they do these resolutions all the time so that Democrats, you know, don't vote for it. And so that Kevin McCarthy did what he did today. And came, I can't believe that 109 Democrats refused to condemn socialism. That's all it was for. It was all to get the outrage candy so that the F channel and the outrage machine can foster on.
Well, true. But again, that leads the base to come up with their own definition. And honestly, I don't even think any of the Republicans could sit there and define for me what is communism, what is democracy, what is a democratic republic, and what is democratic socialism.
And there lies the problem. We've got an outrage machine who shoots us buzzwords and scares us into thinking that, oh my gosh, if we have a social program that's going to help people, we're going to end up like Pol Pot's government or the Bolsheviks or oh my gosh, and I don't even know what that is, but they know to be afraid of it. Be very afraid. We're such a skittish society. We're such a skittish society.
It's, as you say, an idiocracy, by the way. I've always loved that movie. And I just keep going, oh, yeah, yeah. All we need now, you know, Trump came close to the president that was depicted in the movie because, if you remember, he was a former wrestler.
Yeah, I loved
Camacho. And then Trump was all into the wrestling, though he was not a wrestler. So I'm just going, you know, really? Okay. But you have a good evening.
Thanks so much. I'd take Terry Crews as president any day over Donald Trump. At least he was smart enough to send the guy out in the fields and say, stop putting sports drinks on the crops. And if you haven't seen Idiocracy, it is, well, it's not really worth it anymore because we're living much, much further beyond what that movie, what the insanity that movie brought us. But here's the thing, and this is where, again, I come back to what the display was about. The display was simply about getting Democrats on their heels because they're for socialism. And you had, you know, Marsha Blackburn, the senator from Tennessee, saying, you know, we must cut federal spending. Surely our massive bureaucracy can reduce spending by 1, 2, 3, or 5%. And I'm going, yeah, okay, what 5% are you talking about? Tell me what it is that you want to cut. And they won't. They won't tell us because we know what they're going to cut. They're going to cut programs that help working people. They're going to hurt the most vulnerable. They're not going to tax the wealthy. They're not going to take tax breaks away from corporations. They're not going to do any of the stuff that, well, rational, sane people would do at their kitchen tables. No, they're going to kick the most vulnerable because, well, they're down there anyway. Kicking up is really hard. But someone, you know, down on the thing, not that hard. And here's the thing. I go back to our dinner, you know, listening to these angry old white people talk about this single mother with the EBT card. This is what talk radio is talking about, because Republicans right now are looking at blue states and these programs, these social programs, as a way to go. We're going to hold people accountable who cheated during the pandemic. We're not going to go after the people who took the millions and the millions. No, we're not going to go after the Mnuchins and the Republican Congress people. No. We're going to go after those workers who got an extra couple hundred bucks. We're going to go after those people who got maybe a couple extra bucks on their EBT card and maybe did make it to the end of the month with groceries and maybe got a little extra in their unemployment benefits, so that they were able to pay a bill or two. That's who they're going to go after.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. The Pentagon has its eye on a Chinese spy balloon spotted over the western U.S. It wasn't shot down over concerns of falling debris. CBS's David Martin.
The balloon remains over the U.S., flying higher than a commercial airliner, but lower than a satellite, conducting surveillance of what an official called sensitive sites.
Record cold weather expected over the weekend in New York and New England. Standish, Maine resident Dean Munson bought a generator.
We are getting a little extra backup heat here just in case, and sounds like going to be trapped in the house, so this is just a little extra boost.
The House GOP votes to remove Democrat Congresswoman Ilhan Omar from the House Foreign Affairs Committee in response to past remarks about Israel. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
What we believe is Congresswoman Omar is a highly respected member of Congress. She has apologized for her comments she made in the past.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. A federal judge ruled that a civil rights lawsuit against Kyle Rittenhouse in the city and county of Kenosha can go forward. Rittenhouse shot three men in August of 2020 during the protests in Kenosha. Two of those men, Anthony Huber and Joseph Rosenbaum, died. Rittenhouse was acquitted on all counts. Huber's family has filed a civil rights lawsuit to hold Rittenhouse and the police accountable for Huber's death. You could get a text message confirmation when your absentee ballot is received in the future. A new bill being circulated in the Wisconsin State Legislature, co-authored by Republican representatives. Voters can already check on the status of their ballot at the myvote.wi.gov website. Adding a text message option would cost $25,000 to implement, an additional $10,000 to $30,000 per year to operate. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the last segment of the day. If you got something to say, hit us up right now for your crew to tease at 844-967-2789.
I thought they were Crudy Takes.
Crudy's Takes. See, man, it all comes back around to Sports Talk Live.
Something like that.
My wife wants some vegetables for crudité.
You know what I mean?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Thursdays at 11:30, we are joined by Dr. Michael McCutcheon, who is a psychologist, a lecturer, and additionally, he's won 10,000 fantasy football leagues and loves to help people make easy, free money. Dr. Mike fixes your life and your lineup.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in four easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
Two, McCarthy doesn't give a damn about the integrity of elections. He's only clinging to George because his own support in the House is so iffy that he needs Santos's vote to save his own worthless political hide. This is Jim Hightower saying, Santos is a congenital liar, but McCarthy is a self-serving political hack, and neither one should be in public office.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Funny quote of the day over at the Washington Post from former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson. He said, I've been amazed and horrified by how many people are frightened of a guy called Tucker Carlson. Has anybody heard of somebody called? Has anybody heard of Tucker Carlson? What is that? What is that? What is with this guy? All these wonderful Republicans seem somehow intimidated by his perspective. And the thing is you know, in the UK, they look at someone like that snotty little bow tie wearing FCC. They would smack him around like FCC. Over here, wow. But yeah, good on Boris. I don't like Boris, but at least honest. Anyway, share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. Our good friend Forrest. It would be great. Wouldn't it be great if Boris went on with Schmucker and just battered him around? Because, you know, there, they don't put up. We need better. We need better. We need better. Anyway, share some thoughts on the top stories of the day. My good friend Sarah Burris, she's a reporter from Raw Story, rawstory.com. Sarah, I'm sorry, that was a horrible introduction, but the thought of Tucker Carlson just being grabbed by the bow tie and smacked around, you know, that not literally, clearly, because I'm not advocating violence.
The thing is he's probably into that. I mean, really, right? Like, you can kind of spot him a little bit, and he's definitely somebody who might like to wear diapers or something.
Oh, there's an image I did not want to have.
You're welcome.
there's a nightmare I'm going to have now, thanks to you. Thank you. but, you know, this is the thing. I mean, how is it that you know, you look at today's performative displays over, you know, socialism, Sarah, there's socialism. There will not be socialism. And yet, you know, nobody holding these people accountable. It's all this giant, it's this big political play. It's like it's a political theater on steroids.
And even Nancy Mace, a Republican from North Carolina, pretty much admitted that. Whenever she spoke to folks after doing the Omar vote, she was like, you know, I'm not really okay with this vote. And I really just think that we need to be, you know, doing the work that the people sent us here to do. And it's like, oh, what a concept.
I should have had a V8.
Here's an idea. I should be doing my job. You think?
And all we seem to get are these performative displays. Yesterday it was, we're going to have the Pledge of Allegiance before committee meetings. I thought they already had that. Did you need to pass something to do that? I thought you did that as a matter of course. And now this, we condemn no socialism without defining what socialism is, without having any discussion of, you know, what programs we're talking about. And, oh, any type of enforcement or point. It's just, well, we want a gotcha.
Well, remember whenever McCarthy said that the first thing that he was going to do as speaker is that they were going to read the whole Constitution like every day or something? Yeah. Well, first of all, that hasn't happened. So clearly he does not support the Constitution, obviously.
Or he can't read.
Right. But the thing is that if they're spending all of their time praying and doing the pledge and reading the Constitution and all of these performative acts, all of these, you know, removing Democrats from random committees, then they don't actually have to govern. And no one will notice, oh, gee, you know, you're not actually doing anything. They can just be like, well, we didn't get to that because, you know, we spent 6 hours praying and reading the Constitution and wrapping ourselves in the flag and, I don't know, whatever they do with it, whatever else they do with it.
Yeah. But I thought the first thing he was going to do was hit Nancy Pelosi with the gavel. I thought that was the first thing.
Yeah. Oh, God. It seems like he maybe he had just a whole lot of things that he was going to do first. Remember how Donald Trump had that where he was just like, the first thing I'm going to do on day one is going to be blah. And there were like 30 or 40 of those things. And then he got to the actual day and then he just kind of screwed around and tweeted, tried to find the light switches, that kind of deal.
Yeah,
they're all like, surprise.
Now, speaking of Trump, he's pledged he's going to fight gender madness. He's fighting gender madness. When he, again, more performative stuff, he's going to recognize only two genders.
Okay. to be fair, I'm pretty sure he could only recognize two genders. If he saw them, he would be very confused. You do you, Donald. I would be very curious to see if, Stormy Daniels, obviously a lady, but if it wasn't Stormy Daniels and there was another adult film star that was a trans person, would he know? Would he know the difference? I bet he wouldn't.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is where you even get me. I would want to know the difference, and I think I would have a problem down the road if there were. And I think this is a conversation that we as a society haven't had, because there are some expectations when you go down the road in relationships that have to be worked out that I don't know that we've done kind of the background work on.
It's true. One of the most important things in a relationship is to talk about who is going to do the laundry. And that is not a conversation we have as a society.
No, it's true.
But is that what you meant?
I meant who's going to have the children? Because I clearly cannot have them.
That is very true. I mean, I would love to see you try, but...
Not me.
But I think, because... honestly, like, those are the kind of conversations you have in every relationship. Do you want kids? Yes or no? And I feel like that is a natural conversation that just happens. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be like, well, biologically I can't. And that would apply to people who could, be trans pre-op or post-op. It could be somebody who had some kind of medical issue and had a hysterectomy. That could be, anybody over 50, I don't know. Like there's a whole lot of stuff in there. So it doesn't necessarily even mean, I would love to have kids, but I can't.
But here's the thing.
It doesn't necessarily mean a gender.
There's so many more things that need to be addressed.
Yeah. Like who's going to do the laundry? Where are your values on unions?
Exactly. See, now this is where... But he's pledged. He's going to take this on. This is going to be his big thing. This is going to be his big thing.
And I say yes. Power to him. I think it would be awesome to have the Republican Party basically running in 2024 on nothing but these BS culture war issues, where it's all about gay people and trans people and weddings and marriages and Disney World and whatever. Because I think that, once we get to 2024, we'll actually have some legitimate concerns that Americans want to talk about. And if that's all they can talk about is, down with Disney, come on. That's not going to get you anywhere. It's not even going to get you past Iowa.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's one of those things where the outrage machine just keeps funneling this stuff. If the F channel says it's important, now evidently Trump's upset with the F channel, not giving him the love.
Yeah. Which I think is funny because, he's such a huge viewer. You would think that they would be nicer to him because there's so much of their advertising that will eventually probably come from Trump. I don't know if he'll do ads on their channel, but yeah, it's, I guess all he does is watch it all day and he gets mad when they're not nice about him. So, okay. Bummer. And, now you've got DirecTV has OAN and Newsmax are off. So his options are very slim. I don't know what kind of cable he has down there. If it's DirecTV or something else. But yeah. The best thing about him watching Fox News all the time is that the Lincoln Project can show ads down there targeting Palm Beach County and do ads on Fox News, and it just drives him up the wall. It's the best thing in the world.
And speaking of Florida, evidently DeSantis back at war with Disney?
Yeah. I guess that they pulled some of the funding off of the, it's the weirdest story. Like Disneyland as a 36 mile megaplex is its own incorporated city.
Right.
And the reason for it is so that you can have police, fire, IMSA,
public transportation, the best public transportation in the country, may I add you.
And it's all basically handled by the park, by the company. And they, in the great state of Florida, DeSantis really wants to take all of that away and wants to have the state vote to take that decades long law away from them, which is basically going to end up costing the county, the actual county, I want to say, what was it, like something like $2.5 million in just the first year, and then every year after that it's going to be more. And it's just, again, like it's this performative stuff that ultimately ends up taxing Floridians, and they're probably going to end up, you know, keeping the ticket prices the same, even though they're not paying for their own fire and IMSA. But at the same time, like if you've got all of that stuff, like if you've got the ambulance being run by the county and you're across the park or something, like how long does it take you to get there to somebody who's injured? So that's really scary for, you know, anybody who's got a little bit of a dodgy heart and can't do more than small world. Just saying. Know your defibrillator.
Know your defibrillator. No, but the last time we were there, it was like, you know, the best public transit ever. You never had Seriously. To wait but a couple of minutes for a train, and you go, can we do this? This is a way forward. Can we build this around the country?
And the buses too. Like so you've got the monorail, and then you've got the buses, and I mean, there's a bunch of different, there's the ferry. You can even take a ferry. Yeah.
No, all that transit.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
No, it's fantastic. I mean, if only.
My dream is if some other state would figure out how to get enough private money and state funds to offer Disney the option to move out of Florida. I think that would be so funny for them to just sort of call his bluff and be like, all right, see ya.
Here's your swampland back.
Yeah. Because that's the thing, is it really was swampland. It was undevelopable, is what they called it. And so it's like, well, you know, have fun. Good luck.
So speaking on the fun front, you know, because again, I'm coming back to today's, I can't get this out of my head today. And this is where I started today's show. You had a shooting last night of a councilwoman in New Jersey, mm-hmm. Murdered out front of her home. Yeah. In Central Ohio, you had a guy, a stepfather, blow his head off in a local junior high. Got very little news coverage. This ridiculous, you know, we're denouncing socialism. This is all over the news. Everywhere you look, it's, you know, the Democrats, they voted for socialism. And it's, you know, these investigations that we know are coming, you know, the weaponization committee and mm-hmm. all of this. I mean, are we going to tire of this soon?
I think so. And I think that is the big piece of this where, you know, I feel like you, with Republicans, when they went through this during the 90s, you know, there's only so much that you can saber rattle. There's only so much that you can throw a fit about, and people would just finally start tuning it out.
You think? And, I mean, because I think we were a completely different society in the 90s. You know, there were still people around who were old enough to go, cut out the nonsense. My grandparents were still around to smack us around a bit, to tell us to sit down and shut up. The old people now, angry and entitled and snotty. And man, I can't be around old white people anymore. I got to stop. It's bad for my soul.
Dude, for real, you need to find like some different friends. You're freaking me out. We're going to find you like, you know, some hippies to hang out with or something. But the thing is like, you know, you're really competing a lot for television these days. And so if Republicans aren't getting any attention other than Fox News, again, like nobody cares? Nobody's going to be glued to this the way that they were, like the January 6th committee, which had millions and millions of viewers. You're not going to have that prime time spot on CBS to do some, you know, random right wing hearing about, you know, CRT. It's just not going to happen. And so I think that they truly believe that, you know, somehow they're going to capture America with these crazy ideas that they think, you know, everybody is with them on. And it's like, I really think that they believe their own crap.
But the real stuff, they're not going to go after. I look at Jamie Raskin, who looked at the Durham investigation and said, you know, that's the weaponization of the Justice Department. They literally, you know, dug this guy up to specifically target Democrats. This is the stuff that Republicans are complaining and whining about. Here it is. They're not going to investigate that.
No, they're definitely not. The Senate will. Dick Durbin has already made it pretty clear that he wants to investigate this. One of the things that I heard one of the Mueller prosecutors say today is that there are two different parts of the Justice Department. There's the Inspector General, and then there's OPR, which is the personnel kind of review. And both of those pieces of the Justice Department essentially investigate the ethics of the people working there.
Right.
So they're going to both be on this thing. Plus, you've got the Senate. And I think you've got, I don't know if the New York Times has more information, but they kind of have started to drop a little bit of hints. Like a couple of the reporters on this story have dropped hints that there's more coming to this story than just what they reported about Durham so far. This coordination between the Attorney General and the special counsel, like that is a level of corruption that, you know, the Justice Department really tried to fix after Watergate. That was the reason that they started the personnel review board at the DOJ. And so it'll be interesting to see if more shoes are going to drop and what that then means for hopefully for Bill Barr's career.
It's just going to mean more shoes. I mean, this is where I've become jaded in this world. There are tons of shoes all over the living room.
Yeah.
And we're tripping over them all over them. And we're being pummeled with the shoes as they're falling. And yet nobody's being made to clean them up. Nobody's, your analogy, not mine, which is why I'm belaboring this. Nobody's forced to clean this mess up. Nobody's being held accountable. Nobody has to put them back in the shoe rack. None of that. Nobody's going to jail. Nobody's got the bracelets. Nothing.
Yeah, that is very true. I wonder if this is something too, where we can, somebody can complain to the, can file a complaint to the Bar Association about Bill Barr, because clearly there are ethics that were violated here that you swear as an attorney to uphold.
Yeah. Yeah, but these people are shameless. I mean,
they are.
Just shameless. Finally, I want to get your thoughts on, evidently the FBI is, I guess, finally going to look into George Santos's animal rescue charity, because why not? Why not steal, you know, money from a dying dog?
Right. I mean, it's nice to see that they actually care. I think too, it's part of also an SEC violation, because there's some online fraud that happened with the GoFundMe thing. So I'm wondering if that will kind of lead over into more than one sort of probe, or that they'll be able to coordinate on something, because, I mean, it seems like the FBI is really busy these days. What with them, you know, not being ready for January 6th.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's a piece of it. I mean, there's that investigation. There's a state investigation. There's DOJ told the FEC this week, because he had a whole bunch of campaign finance fraud stuff. DOJ said, you know what, FEC, we got this one, which is great because the FEC doesn't actually function. So
the question I've got on this, does this mean eventually he's going to go to jail? He's going to get removed, or is this a slap on the wrist thing? Don't do it again. Pay a fine. Move. Keep your job and stay in Congress.
I think that there's enough here that he goes to jail. I don't know which case it will be. It may very well be the SEC stuff related to the Ponzi scheme he worked for without being a registered broker. the campaign finance stuff, that there today we figured out that there was $100,000 that just went missing. It's like, okay, well, who among us doesn't lose $100,000. Who among us doesn't lose $100,000 in the couch cushions, right? Pocket change. So that piece of it, and then who donated the money to his campaign, or who donated the money, the loan that he could give to his campaign. And so, like, some of these, you really got to ask, like, is this a foreign country? Is this the mob? Like, it's the kind of question where you wonder, yeah, he could be in legal trouble, but is this something that could get him killed?
Yeah, don't walk through any open windows there, George.
That's scary. But I think he ends up in jail. I really do.
All right. That you got money on jail? I say he's going to stay in Congress because it's what we do.
Hey, here's the thing. He may actually stay as an elected official while being in jail because Republicans wouldn't vote to remove him.
There you go.
That's a possibility.
So we can both be right. Win-win. See how that works? Win-win. Great stuff. Sarah, I appreciate you taking time and sharing your expertise and all of your important work. I appreciate the time.
My pleasure. Have a good weekend.
Good stuff. Thanks so much, our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her stuff over at rawstory.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1821. That was the birthday of the first woman to earn her medical degree in the United States. Her name was Elizabeth Blackwell. She was born in Bristol, England. Her family moved to the United States when she was just 11 years old. Elizabeth decided she wanted to pursue a career in medicine. She believed that women patients should have the option of a female doctor, but it was not easy to make her dream come true. Medicine was considered men's work. Undeterred, Elizabeth began to study medicine on her own. Medical schools rejected her applications. Finally, she was accepted to the Geneva Medical College in New York. Most students at the school were horrified by the idea of a woman studying medicine, but she won many over with her ability and hard work. In 1849, she completed her work and graduated, but her difficulties were not over. No hospital in New York would hire her. She was even refused rental space when landlords found out she wanted it for a woman-run medical practice. Finally, she purchased a home for her practice. She also started a medical dispensary for the poor in New York City. She was later joined in her work by her sister, who also graduated with a medical degree. She went on to lecture on medicine in England, becoming the first woman to have her name on the British Medical Register. She and her sister helped to train nurses for service during the Civil War. They also founded a women's medical college that operated for 31 years. By her determination, Elizabeth Blackwell helped open the door for future generations of women to work in the field of medicine. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So it was 63 years ago today that four black college students sat at a whites-only lunch counter in Greensboro, North Carolina, the Woolworths counter, the Greensboro Four, as some are calling them. When we were down there, we were corrected right quick. It's the A&T Four. It's interesting how Greensboro has now taken them on as their own. It's it's the Greensboro Four now. It wasn't always that. But the thing is you go down, there's a museum there now. And again, horrible treatment of people, tourism, right there in Greensboro, the Woolworth store there. It's a museum to civil rights. You go down into the downstairs where the diner was, where the lunch counter was, and it is impeccably restored. and they walk you through what it would have been like, and it's.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.